Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
What you said, Fred?
Man, you know we better take it on the lamb.
you better watch the man. I don't like the hood. What you say, Fred?
I say we better take it on the lamb out of here.
You better watch the man.
But
come over here, brother. Let me tell you something. You think we're talking too loud?
First that's first.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch him. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What'd you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down. Well, you know, look at him. We can't have that.
That's right. That is, yeah.
There ain't no alcohol. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, Jason?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now. Yeah.
And on the sea.
Excuse me, cat, while I rap.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Homelessness is a Mindset, and we got to straighten out a technical glitch here. But while we're straightening out this technical glitch, if you're on Blog Talk Radio, Oh, wait a minute. Okay, if you're on Blog Talk Radio, go to our scrolling marquee page, and we have some program notes that I'm getting ready to read from. And, okay, wait a minute. Pardon the technical difficulties here.
Okay.
All right, here we go, and let me mute that. Okay, here we go. Homelessness is a mindset. I got the idea last night on Clubhouse with this very intelligent guy. He laid it down. But anyway, and I agree with him. Homelessness is a mindset. Now, it can happen to anybody, including me, but homelessness is a mindset. And let's go around. This is in no particular order. I've got 7 points. Number one, any place could be made into a home. Any place on this planet can be made into a home. And there's a distinction here between a house versus a home. A house is a physical dwelling. You know, you can kick it, touch it, feel it, you know, that type of thing. A home is intangible. It's emotional. It's psychological. You know, it's like when you were young or whatever your age might be. It's also a support system. A home is basically a place where you can eat, sleep, you got comfort, you got, you know, somebody's got your back, you got your parents. I'm drawing an ideal picture here now. All right. And that's a home. Now, they're housed inside every house. But if they decide to sell that house or move out of that apartment or move wherever they're moving to another location, their home is still intact, although they might be physically in another location or geographically in another location. But any place can be made into a home. It could be the woods. It could be the car. It could be somebody buys a van and pimps it out and lives in it. That's their home. It can be a mobile home. It can be a treehouse. Any place where you have comfort and a support, a psychological and an emotional support system, that's your home, no matter where it's at. A lot of people get it confused. Well, you know, if you don't have the house, you don't have home. No. Any place can be made into a home. Point number two, homelessness is a mindset. Okay, so what, you can't afford to live in the Taj Mahal or Buckingham Palace? Those are just two structures, you know. And let's go with, because part of a home, once again, is you got to have a support system in there. Point number three, find somebody who knows how to build a house. Now, if it's a house that you need, if it's shelter that you need, all right, you can find somebody on YouTube at a local community college, maybe at your religious place if you're into that type of thing, study or whatever, Saturday class. Ask around and find somebody that can show you how to build a house. Point number four, study the environment. Now, you know, quite often on this podcast, I use the chessboard as an analogy. It's got 64 squares. If you're, so to speak, homeless in air quotes, check out the environment and find out where you can set up a home. Now, that home, your shelter might be a tent that you buy from Walmart for $30 to $50. But if you know the environment, you can know you can find places where you can legally set up your home. Guess what that tent? Many Walmarts, not all, but many Walmarts allow people to camp in their parking lot overnight. Because Walmart realizes there's a lot of people that their home is inside their car, their station wagon, or their van, or whatever vehicle that they might have. Some people have bought boxcars or school buses and pimped those out, and that's their home. Next point, and this goes back to point three, team up with somebody who knows how to build a house. Now, they might not, now, let me, the distinction here is you might need a partner. So you might be with a partner already, so husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it might be, or two friends. You both need a place to stay. You need a roof over your head. Team up, pull your resources together, go to the person that knows how to build the house or build the appropriate type of shelter for your budget. The correct term is appropriate technology, appropriate housing technology, based on your budget. For some of you, the appropriate technology based on your budget could be you got enough to do a school bus, to customize a school bus into a nice, chic home. Others, it could be a different type of tiny house. Others, it could be your budget dictates the appropriate technology if you want to go for the tree house. There's a lot of variety out here. Next item, team up with a group of people. Team up with a group of people, you can have your own village. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's living in the same type of structure. You got your own village. Smallest village I've seen so far had four households, just four houses, when I was over in Europe. And they probably have some stuff, places like this here in the USA. Last one is put in the first 20 hours of house building. The book that I talked about yesterday, and I'm going to bring it up here again today, and we have a picture of it on our blog talk platform today. It's titled The First 20 Hours, Learn Anything, Any Skill, Learn the Fundamentals in 20 Hours. You're not going to be a master builder. You're not going to be a master or professional carpenter. But read the book, The First 20 Hours, and the book basically says that you can learn the fundamentals of anything within 20 hours. You're not going to be world class. You're not going to be a master. You're not going to be a grandmaster, nothing like that. But you'll learn enough of the fundamentals of anything, learning the language, building the house, becoming a plumber, becoming a carpenter, in 20 hours. Once you learn the fundamentals, you'll know enough where you can self-correct. So that's what we have for you, the first 20 hours of house building. Homelessness is just a mindset. You can learn how to be not homeless by following those seven steps that I just put out there. All right, let's see. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. 904, your mic is open.
Okay, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate the conversation, and I've been listening for a few callers today. Is everyone able to hear me pretty well and clearly?
I can.
So I agree with so much of what both of the last couple people have been saying, especially about homelessness. I will say that I'm somewhat of an expert in homelessness. I've personally been homeless perpetually. There's been a couple times when I would consider myself not homeless, and I do agree that it is a mindset within the last decade, or maybe a little over a decade. You know, I'm in touch with many different services and organizations and individuals that deal with homelessness all over the United States and all over northern Mexico. I've spoken to thousands of people who are homeless in Mexico and in all over the United States this last year, within this last year. For many years, I've lived in what would be considered homeless shelters or missions, where typically it will just be men. Sometimes there's men and women. Sometimes there's families, but it's almost always just men that are at homeless shelters. And there is a couple things that I think have been left out of what has been said. One thing is that, yes, I do agree that homelessness is a mindset. You can change your mindset. You can create a home. I agree with all of that. Many people do eventually create their own home and feel at home wherever they're at. But I think for many people, and I'm not sure if it's most, but I know that this is true for many people, home is where their heart is, and where my heart is and where most people's heart is with their family. They feel most safe and most comfortable and most protected with their family. So the people who have a biological interest in their survival, not necessarily a husband or wife, but many cases it is a husband or wife, because they promised to support and help each other and defend each other for the rest of their lives. So hopefully that is the case with that marriage. But what I'm saying is, even, you know, and I've done this myself. I've pretended to not be homeless. I've changed my mindset. I've had houses, you know, multi-story houses, cars, the whole thing. And I've pretended not to be homeless. You know, I've even told people that I'm not homeless. I'm on vacation. I've definitely said that before. But really, I'm still homeless. And as much as we can pretend that we're not homeless, and as much as we can try to make a home and try to organize things, our lives for so many generations have been based around the concept of the nuclear family and our extended family. You know, in many cases on both sides, many people will know what I'm talking about, coming together and creating that home environment. And so when either our home is, and I would say most homeless people, and as you guys know, I'm not talking about shelterless people, I'm talking about homeless people. Most homeless people, you know, you put them into a home, you know, you give them a job, they're great. You know, they can do it. They're fine. They can still participate in all of the community activities in a village or whatever it might be. But they're still not at home. They're still not at the place where they will feel the most safe in their surroundings. And that's something that I'm glaring right in the face even today, because I've been living in a very large house, beautiful house. You know, I've got multiple offices, and I'm all alone in this house. Right. Yeah. But I'm not with my family. I'm still not with my family. And I want people to realize it's not just, oh, well, you can go find another fam. You know, you can go marry again. You can go find another child. No, you know, men and women work their whole lives surviving. They're people care for them their whole lives, so that maybe one day they're going to be able to have family of their own. If they don't, that's fine too. They can help care for their own family and their extended family. But many people, they work their whole lives to have their own family, which they're interested in. And once that family is taken away from them, or in many cases, the DOJ or Justice Department will make orders to separate that family for whatever, you know, and usually no one in the family is requesting that separation either. And that is what is causing homelessness for the most part, from what I've seen all over the United States. And I just wanted to put that out there for you guys. Oh, the other one last thing, the other the caller or the audio presenter before you, I can't remember his name, the older gentleman, discussing how I'm sorry about that. I enjoyed what you said. I think you're correct about everything that you said. But I think your selective perception has been very isolated to a certain pigment tone. And, I'm a red person. I'm not a black person. You know, I've had to build houses structures near train tracks. I've lived near train tracks all over the place for many years.
Red person, are you speaking about Native American?
I'm not saying that you're racist, and I'm not saying Native American, yellow, brown, white, anything else. What I'm saying is this is the case. What you said is correct, and it's the case with all of us. We all have.
Matter of fact, I'm glad. Number one, I'm glad you called. Number two, I'm glad you pointed that out, because nearly Fuller goes in one direction. I sort of had to pick and choose that, but I'm glad you brought that up because you're right. This topic involves everybody. It runs across every race, color, what have you. There are homeless people around. There's an expression I use on this program occasionally. Everybody gets shit on. So, that's my personal point of view on it. Whereas with Neely Fuller, he has a different spin on it, which you could probably take, who's ever listening, you could take that as racist. But the point why I played that audio was that anybody, regardless of race, color, creed, religion, or what have you, geography, anybody can team up with other people and build shelter. That's why I played that particular video. I mean, audio.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Continue.
My very last thing that I'll say, I'll let you guys keep on going and you can discuss what I've said and tell me how I'm wrong and everything, which is totally fine.
I agree with everything you're saying. Matter of fact, you've given me some ideas on, we need to have some discussions, not only here, but in some other platforms I'm on. When you're discussing this, we really need to discuss the home part of homeless or homelessness, because that home part, you know, what kind of support system, what kind of family members or friends do you have where you feel safe if you are hungry or if you have any type of need? I mean, the needs that you're going to get from a home, and a home really has nothing to do with a physical structure, you know, because if this is a hypothetical situation, I'm going to use the Brady Bunch. Okay, the Brady Bunch, it wasn't so, forget about where they lived, no matter where they lived, their home can move. Because as long as their family structure, the nuclear family stays intact, where everybody feels safe, everybody knows each other. If somebody needs clothes, if they need advice, they need somebody a shoulder to cry on, they need Alice to cook up a meal. You know, it doesn't matter where the geography is or what you're living in. the home part is very important. A lot of people who go to social services are basically socially bankrupt. Not all, but many. In other words, they can't go to a family member for whatever reason, not passing judgment. They can't go to a friend's house. They can't go for some reason and sleep on somebody. They can't couch surf or garage surf or whatever. They have no support system. So they go to social services where to see, you know, maybe I can get some medical attention here, or maybe I can get food here, or maybe I can get some advice on, you know, medical help or whatever. That's what social services is about. And once again, typically, many people who go to social services, and there's nothing wrong with going to social services, but a lot of those people are what I would call socially bankrupt. So that's home is really a social construct. And once people don't have that home part, that social capital, you know, then, and that's one way that you can go, that's all part of that mindset. Because some people get in, as we all do from time to time, we might get into a tiff with a family member, a blood relative or whatever, and we might or they might burn bridges and stop talking to each other completely. And once you keep on burning down your social capital bridges, you know, because some people do it with, you know, they think they have enough money and they can do without the social interaction, social contact, what I call social capital. But we need to have more discussions on the home part of homelessness. It has nothing to do really with the shelter. It's how are you doing with your social capital, how, you know, home capital, that might be another term. But home is where the heart is, I think you said it earlier. Anyway, but any other comments?
The other one is outside the home. And also, I want to tell you guys that I also have built tiny homes and sheds recently just south of where I'm at right now on 904, because you guys called me out over here in Florida, in the northeastern Florida
right
now.
That's around Jacksonville.
That is, I'm in Jacksonville right now, and just south of here for the last, few months, I've been building homes. Well, not, I wish they were homes. I've been building on people's homes, their own private, custom-built tiny homes and sheds.
I tell you what, I would like to, I'm looking at a number on the switchboard. Is that a number I can call you back later today?
I mean, you guys can call me back anytime. You guys can.
Okay. Here's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a person with your skill set to help us build some places. So if you're interested in earning some extra money, I'd like to talk with you on, you know, since you've got a skill level already, if that's okay with you.
I do have a skill set. That the one that you're looking for is not my skill set, but I'm a publisher, okay. And I can help you to locate the right home builder, which is what we call them, actually. You know, we call it home builders. You know, they build huge amounts of homes all over the world, of course.
Now, we're talking about tiny homes, though. That's what I'm interested in.
You're talking about which kind of homes again?
Tiny. Like something like 400 square feet or below.
Yep, I know.
Tiny homes, doghouses, and sheds.
Our father, you know, I probably shouldn't give away too much of myself here, but our father was the founder of Contractors Warehouse. And so I know contractors that build tiny homes all over the United States. I'll connect you with whoever you guys want, wherever you guys want. And you guys can go and work with them. I think that's the best way is, you know, maybe they can teach you how to do it, and that takes all this time. But why not just work for them and build the homes with them? You know, they always need more labor. It's very difficult to find people that are dependable, that are really interested in housing. And so I think that, you know, just applying with them and saying, you know, allow me to work for you and get paid – You'll learn about the homes. You'll learn about why, you know, how people are able to afford to have tiny homes built on their own property. And I think this all boils down again to, like you said, this mindset where it's not about the structure itself, but I will say that the marriage, the family, when they're together underneath the same roof, they're more likely to be at home, or they're more likely to be able to have that home and that stability. It really, it's called the Roman family in our history. That is why they won the war. It's because of that stability, because they had that structure. Everyone had their own home. We weren't all just running around homeless, not knowing where to go, you know, not knowing where our family was at, who were the, you know, and you know, hard to connect with them. We would go to each other's structures, you know, our houses. That's what we do. But for, you know, for years, this is the attack. If they can split us up, if they can split up our homes, our families, our structures, right? That's when the structure plays in. Because a lot of people think, oh, well, this person is, you know, he's sitting on the sidewalk, so he's homeless, or he's sitting outside of a grocery store, so this person is a homeless person. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say in almost every case, I'm not going to say every case, but in almost every case, these people are not homeless people. Because what they're doing is they're putting themselves in front of other individuals. They're holding signs. They're bumming. They're bums. They're trying to extract from other people, and they're using the valor of being homeless. And I think there is, homeless people are stronger people. Historically, it's very difficult to be homeless. And so to survive while you're homeless gives a valor that no other type of person has. And so they're getting false empathy or homelessness to bum money off of people. If you're not home, you don't want to be around other people. You don't want to sit yourself right in front of a grocery store and have people look down on you and throw money at you. You want to go home. And the point here in Jacksonville, Florida, and I did discuss this with a black man here in downtown Jacksonville in the last couple of months, is that the point of being homeless and the point of homelessness is not to just continue to be homeless. It's not to just continue to go on being homeless forever. The point is to go home. You know, it's not to go into, and we want to have dignity while we're homeless. You know, we want to have a structure. We want to have shelter. We want to have clothing. We want to have food. We want to have health care and the basic things that we need to be dignified in society, but the point is not just to sustain that homelessness, you know, put us into a nicer house, put us into a little village of a bunch of homeless people. That's not what the point is. The point is to go home. That is the point. I really think that you guys are on topic here, and I really appreciate your perspective on this. And I've been preaching what you've been saying about homelessness being a mindset for so many years. I've watched many people go home. It's not because their mindset changes. It's because they actually go home. They go to the place, the people, the environment where they feel the most safe at. And maybe that is on some corner, you know, in some box or whatever it might be. You know, maybe it's usually it's with their family. I'm sorry, you guys. I love you guys. Please continue on.
No. That, man, I'm taking notes while you're talking. This is like going to school for me because you brought up, you've attacked, now might be not be the right word, but you pointed out a part of the word itself, homelessness, the home part, which a lot of, and I'm not knocking any churches or ministries that have a homeless program. Some look at it different ways. Some, all right, we got a homeless ministry on Thursdays or whatever. at 6 p.m. So people show up, they do a Bible study, and then they feed you. For some people, that's the way they attack it. The Salvation Army has a network of shelters. Many of them men's shelters. They might have some family shelters. And you can stay there for a certain amount of time. I think they allow you in for 3 days rent-free, as long as you don't get into trouble, don't come in there drunk or high, 3 days. And then after that, you have to pay rent from anywhere from $7 to $15 a day. And this day labor truck that typically comes by early in the morning and takes people to work, and they get paid that day. So that's the way they attack it. But, and I'm not involved with any of these programs, but I like what you brought up. I think a lot of these outreaches, ministries, what have you, shelters, they don't attack it from what you talked about, the home part. And that,
look,
that's because there's a difference between a home and a house. And I remember something my stepfather told me years ago. A man can buy a house, but it's typically a woman that can turn that house into a home. You know, and like you said, a lot of people, they eventually want to go home. At the end of the day, they want to go home. And
that's,
I can even apply that to a social. Hold on, I'm gonna land my plane here in a minute. When I'm driving, and let's say, and I'm a black guy, and let's say I get pulled over, and I don't play Perry Mason. I don't hold court on the street. I have my driver's license, registration, proof of insurance. By the time they hit my side of the car, I had the window all the way rolled down because I know what they're going to ask me. I've never had any encounters with the police on the traffic stop. And here's my philosophy that I believe has kept me alive. And I've been stopped two or three times when I've been dead wrong speeding, and they didn't give me a ticket. The main rule that I apply is this. I know that policeman, that patrolman, they want to get home just like I want to do at the end of the day. Like you said, they want to go home. So I'm not going to do anything to slow that down. And so far, that strategy of not causing a ruckus, not questioning them or anything like that. Like I said, I've been stopped two or three times when I've been dead wrong and didn't get a ticket. All because I know that policeman, because he doesn't know what he's going to run into, all day long. I want to get him home quicker than I want to get home. Therefore, I'm cool, calm, collected. And comply. That's how I handle it. Anyway, go back to you, sir. You were saying?
Look, I mean, you guys are spot on here, and I'm not really saying anything much more than what you're saying. I think that you guys are on target with this stuff. I'm trying to add to it. I think that right now what I'm hearing from many people, that there's a lot of people who drive to Florida from other parts of the United States and work here during certain parts of the year. And, what I hear from them here's another big one here right now. Here's how they're slaughtering homeless people, especially homeless military veterans. Okay. This is what I did a nice, video report on. It's called the Barron Center. This is out of Ohio. They say that they're a homeless shelter, right? They have a women's, they have a families, but really all they have is a giant place that has men, they hide the women and whatnot. They're splitting apart the families. To get into the center, you're required to take, this test where they shove this piece of wood up your nose. They move it around up your cavity, mess you up. Then you're required to take an unlimited amount of injections, whatever kind of injection they see fit. And I would say, I personally saw three people
pass out and die in front of me, you know, while they were in line trying to get a bed. And many of these people were not homeless people. You know, many of these people were just looking for shelter. You know, they chose to be away from their home because they wanted to use drugs. Okay, they wanted to drink alcohol. They wanted to do fentanyl or meth or whatever it might be. People, I hear all the time. I hear Tucker Carlson the other day. He says that drugs have ruined the lives of the homeless people. And that's just ridiculous, okay? You know, just the way that he insinuates that homeless people are all on drugs somehow is wrong. It's false. Homeless people are just not at home, okay? They're not. It doesn't mean they're on drugs. It doesn't mean that they're mentally unhealthy. You know, and I would say almost every case they're not in that way, right? That's not the case.
Right.
We're just talking about normal people that want to go home. So, and in Daytona Beach, which is another part of Florida, they're doing the same thing. They're forcing people to be on injections, an unlimited amount of injections that they're testing out on them if they don't have shelter. And, you know, there are homeless people that are forced away from their families, their brothers, their sisters that they were living with in the same structure for whatever reason. Like I said, usually it's some court order. A lot of times, too, their families will say that they don't want to live with them. They don't want them in their home anymore. And they'll kick family out of their home, and I hate to see that, and it really frustrates me, and I have a hard time solving those problems. Usually they work themselves out. I just hope that, you know, what I encourage people to do that are in that situation is just to reach out to that family and just let them know what your contact information is and let them contact you, and then try to, you know, continue with your life and live the best life that you possibly can. In any case, what I wanted to say is that people are looking at these people, the bums, not the homeless people, but the bums, the fake homeless people on the street that are holding signs and saying how they're homeless and they're military veterans. They're not even military veterans. And they'll say to them, well, McDonald's is hiring for $15 an hour. I had a boss say that, you know, a few months ago, a guy that was building houses. I heard him say that to a couple people that were on the side of the street begging for money. And it's, yes, maybe McDonald's is hiring for $15 an hour, but that does not solve any kind of homeless problem at all. And again, you know, I've spoken to people who are, you know, I talked to one of the old CEOs of DreamWorks, considers himself homeless. He's living in, you know, multi-million-dollar mansions in different parts of the world, still doesn't feel at home. His child's been stolen for years now, you know, can't figure out where his child's at. Doesn't consider himself at home, and I completely understand why. You know, he doesn't feel that he's safe, and the mindset is also that you don't feel that your others that you're part of are safe either. You know, if you don't find that your children or your spouse, if you don't know that your spouse and those that you're, or your grandparent or your brother is safe, you might not feel at home. You know, because you're not looking.
Right.
And so I just want to point that out.
Excellent point. You've really shed a very accurate light on how people really should look at homelessness. That home part, what is a home? What is a home? It's definitely not a house. And a lot of these agencies don't address that. That's something that people are going, I guess, everybody's got a different story, but I guess you got to work on that part of it yourself. Um, building what I would call social capital. But I've been taking notes. If you heard any tapping, that's me taking notes when you're laying out these gyms.
There's people in this community that are unique to any other community I've seen, how they're giving homeless people dignity. And what they're doing is they're giving them free laundry. It is a Christian group. It happens to be a Christian group that started it. They're doing free laundry. They get donations of quarters from their little group. Then they offer free laundry every Monday night at this location. And people come and they do their laundry, okay, who need to do laundry. And they do one load of laundry only. And the people who are helping the people do the laundry have housing. Right, they have many different houses. Some of them have rooms in the houses. Some you can get the whole house. Some you can sleep in a tent in the yard, whatever it might be. And they look for the people that they believe could survive or live well in a house, you know, in a room or whatever it might be. They select those people from those doing the laundry, and they put them into their own home. They bring them into their homes. And then they give them another room. You know, they figure out where they're going to be best fit. There's also many other homeless shelters in this area. They're somewhat accessible, but again, if you don't have the right temperature, or if they do a test and they don't think that you're tested positive or negative or whatever it is, and they want to quarantine you or send you off into a hospital, just because you want shelter, you know, it's not a good decision for your life. You know, you don't want to put yourself in that type of predicament. And so these are individuals that are helping others to be dignified while they're returning home. And just the fact that they're in houses and working with other people who actually are, you know, care about them, they're part of their community, they're real neighbors, you know, all of a sudden, the family starts to get more interested in you. You know, now that you have housing, you're able to maybe find phones or computers, libraries, other ways of communication, so you can connect with your family or those that you are at home with, so you can return to them or have them even come to you. You know, you're not at home. Bring your home to yourself. You know, you can have your family, invite your family to come to wherever you're at if you have that access to the housing that the people here in Jacksonville are providing. And I'm going to be doing some videos and other publications on that scenario where they're locating people in different ways and then bringing them into their homes to, in many cases, solve the homelessness problem for some individuals. Appreciate it, guys.
Org, well, I definitely want to follow that. Jacksonville, which is the largest city in Florida, from Duval County. Well, let me ask you this. There's some homeless families out there that some are in family shelters. Any suggestions for them?
So they have you're with your family, and you're in a shelter. You know what? You know, and maybe something happened to their previous shelter. Maybe their house burned down. Maybe they got flooded. Maybe they had to. You know, maybe they're in some temporary shelter before they go to a different house. Whatever it might be, I can understand that. But I would want to find out, you know, is there extended family that you can live with? Why aren't you living with grandma and grandpa? Or yours are dead. Why don't you go live with his grandma and grandpa, her grandma and grandpa, or, you know, whatever it might be, instead of living off of – and this is what the people say. Because the people that are living in these services, you know, that's a taxpayer-funded service. That's you and I and everyone paying for the service that is having to be there because, and this is not just myself, this is what the people who are solving some of the homelessness problem in this area do. They'll say, when we don't do it ourselves, that's when the government steps in, takes our taxes, and doesn't do it as good, right?
Right.
So what they do is, you know, if they find a family on the street, or, you know, that there's a family right now that's moving out of one of their locations, that the landlord is kicking them out of their house, which is their home. It's a grandma and two young adults, and they're moving into a different location because of these people, because that's what they needed, and they don't have to go to a shelter. There's just other people in the community that are offering a house for this family. We don't want to. You know, we're here in the United States of America here, and this is where we're free. We don't want to be dependent where we have all of these families underneath the services. You know, we're housing all these families in apartments or whatever it is, where the services,
right,
our taxes funding these apartments. Yeah, great. It's keeping them off of the street, they'll say. They should have. I mean, they're not living on the street anyhow. Usually they're in this area and south of here. They're living in green belts and in the woods and this type of thing. People who are bums typically, or those who are trying to get access to services, will live in a more metro or a street environment. I guess what I have to say to that is, you know, I'm not against these programs that put families in housing, but what I'd like people to really think about is, are you just continuing to allow this perpetual homelessness to occur?
And from my point of view, that's a lot of those programs, a lot of those social programs, and that's my opinion, are perpetuating that. My idea on it is, I think the common denominator among the critical mass of homeless people, I don't know what that number would be, but the common denominator is, take away the ones that might be mentally ill or something like that, they don't know how to build a basic, simple structure. Four walls, a floor, and a roof. If we go back 150 years ago, more people knew how to do it. But as more people moved into cities, particularly the larger cities, where you have more comfort and convenience, you know, that's a skill set that a lot of people just have no interest in. You know, let me get the rent money, let me get the mortgage money, let me apply for a bank loan. But something, you know what, I'll even go simpler than that, a doghouse. The average person that is struggling with homelessness, they don't have to build a doghouse. And for some reason, particularly with, we have YouTube now, where you can learn how to build virtually anything. Between watching the videos as many times as you want on demand, and then contacting the people within those videos, and then in a place like you're in Duval County, no matter what the socioeconomics of a neighborhood across the United States, there in the poorest of the poorest neighborhoods, there's a public library with a section of books that can give you instruction on how to build a doghouse to a basic house.
I think there's truth in what you're saying. I appreciate what you're saying. Like you know already, I've actually been building structures, been building the tiny houses myself. I can send you videos and photos of these things whenever you want. The problem is not that that individuals can't build houses. Because like I can build housing. I could build housing for so cheap. I could build housing just off of, you know, whatever I've got, you know, around on these different properties, and be fine. However, it's much more complicated than that, and to be dignified, to be able to survive, especially here where I'm at in this area right now, and it's even worse in northern areas where you might be at or some of your other people might be at, it gets so hot here that you will die from heat exhaustion, heat stroke, and and dehydration and whatnot. If you don't have, you know, reasonable air conditioning, which is dependent primarily off of the grid, there's, you know, definitely services like the police are going there. There's a community newsletter that I have right in front of me right now delivered to this house where it says on the bottom, you know, if you see a homeless camp that is being established adjacent to a subdivision, open wooded areas or areas around any interstate approaches, you can report them to, and it's got the phone number for the police department. So, you know, the people who are buying and selling houses, and some of the owners in this area, you know, they don't want people building structures, which I still I understand emergencies better than most people, and an emergency shelter, emergency housing. And I've had to do it all over the United States and all over Mexico this last year. The problem is that our solution is not emergency housing. The solution is real, normal, state-of-the-art housing for the people that we care for and that we feel the most safe with. It's not, you know, building sheds and, you know, I think the doghouse is kind of funny, but, you know, but quite literally, it's not building these little doghouses out in the woods, you know, for a few weeks. There's sewage problems that exist when you do this. And look, I've done this. This is what I've had to do in my life to survive. Okay. So I understand. And I don't think it's good. I think it's bad. I think that we all deserve to have reasonable housing and be dignified, whether we're homeless or not. Right. You know, if we choose not to live in that structure, then that's fine. But and historically, people have been building their own houses for millions of years, of course, but usually we come together with a community of people to build our own house or structure.
Yeah, absolutely right. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. That part when you said, historically, for thousands of years, and typically, now you made a very important, said a very important word. Typically, those houses were built within a community of people. The Amish do it. The Mennonites still do it.
We don't just get our own home. We don't just want to be homeless. I mean, we don't want to be homeless forever ourselves. We need communities of people. We need communities of nuclear families that are living together in the same, you know, same property, same structures, all working together independently. And that makes us interdependent, and that's called the Roman family, and that's why Rome won the war, and that's what is being attacked here in the United States and in Mexico and probably in Canada. I haven't been there recently. But that is the attack on us right now. And so what we need to do is find ways to bring families together, to keep families from being artificially separated. You know, a lot of times by government services, we're paying, you know, if a parent, usually a female, steals the children from the other parent, they're paid more of our taxes if they keep that child away from the other parent, right? That's incentivizing the destruction of our families in an artificial way. Right now, you know, the Y, not the YMCA, the YWCA is doing this right now. You guys can look it up if you want. But that is the type of thing that is causing this homelessness. You know, I could talk about the prison system causing homelessness as well. I think you guys alluded to that just a little bit. But we need to look for ways to stop the artificial destruction of our families and our homes, and the separation of our families and homes, and instead look for ways to bring those people together, and as fast as possible, and return not just our own family's home, but also our neighbor's family's home, so that way we can all live a better life together. Sorry, go ahead. We'll all have better.
I'm taking notes because you're dropping some gems here. I was just, matter of fact, reading about the Roman family definition here on my phone. So, I'm taking notes from all that, and you're teaching stuff that's just not taught. I haven't heard anywhere else, but I'm so glad you called in this morning.
Look, the reason why this is not being taught, and the reason why they're pushing, okay, I'm going to be flat out honest with your call. I mean, and you can block me, you can be angry at me, you can do whatever you want to me. Okay, the fact of the matter is, if you go to Black Lives Matter website, it's going to say we are for the destruction of the nuclear family. We are trying to.
I read their website when they, and I'm not a Black Lives Matter fan. I read the original website, and that turned me off to them back way. They've updated it since then. But that turned me off that organization then.
This is a big funded organization that is causing and incentivizing and pushing for the separation of our nuclear families, which is our Roman family that you're reading about right now. And this is the reason why they're so successful. You know, I mean, it's very easy to think about. If you want to cause homeless, if you're trying to take over other people or other villages or harm other groups of individuals, you don't want them to have the support systems in their home, right? You don't want them to have their husband to protect them and their wives to be able to care for them, and their grandparents to watch after. And, everyone plays a role here, right, in a family. And so if you can take away those people, especially from children, then they're much more vulnerable, and that will be much, you can take advantage of homeless people, because homeless people are vulnerable people. Anyone will agree with this. If you're homeless, you're more vulnerable than if you're not homeless, because if you want to go home, someone can offer to you, hey, I can get you home. Here's, just give me whatever. You're more vulnerable to that. Okay, so homeless people are more vulnerable people. People take advantage of that, and that's how to destroy people, is by separating their families and taking them apart, breaking apart their homes, right? Selling off their home to someone else from some other place, right? Selling it off to some other community, whatever it might be. I was walking by a gentleman's home. I want to leave you guys with just a little bit, because I have to grab one thing real quick here. But I want to leave you guys with a little bit of comedy here.
Okay.
Walking by a gentleman's home the other day, locally, that I've walked by for months, many times. I'm going to say the gentleman is Mr. Adams. Okay, Mr. Adams is a black man, and I didn't know him, but I would wave hi to him on the street. And again, I'm a red man, okay? And I'm striking. I stand out a little bit. I look funny or whatever it is. So, but I'm waving at him every day. I walk by, I'm waving at him. He's sitting outside, and he won't look at me. He doesn't look up at me. He's in his home, and he's got his home, and maybe I'm even homeless. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just walking down the street. I don't have much. Why is this guy always walking down the street? But he won't respond to me ever from his home. He won't invite me in his home. He won't even acknowledge that I'm alive. And I'm getting angry with this guy, because I'm thinking, man, this guy must be racist or something. Why won't he even wave at me when I'm waving at him hi, and he's at his home? I know where his home is. I know where he's at. Why won't even you wave hi at me on the street? It doesn't make sense. Keep on waving. And then a few days go by, another neighbor says, Mr. Adams is blind. He can't see anything. And I'm like, what?
Okay.
So I walk by Mr. Adams again, and I, instead of waving, I said, hey, how you doing over there? How you doing? And son of a gun, the guy says, he's so welcoming. Oh, hey, welcome, Dave. What you doing over there? Came over and talked to him for a while. It was great, right? So
right.
you know, I was thinking the completely wrong thing, right? Because I'm used to that in a lot of places, even around here, especially north of here. But you know, that's what I want to remember is to, you know, welcome other people into your home too. You know, it's like if you have your own home, if you're taken care of, and you know, you got your own family, you got your husband, you got your wife, and you're able to help someone else and return them home or help them to further that process or get closer to that goal, then do it. You know, help other people in need and reach out to other people in whatever way you can. So anyhow, sorry, a little bit of humor. Sorry about that.
Well, I enjoyed it in all, and I took plenty of notes here. As a matter of fact, you've enlightened me on what homelessness is. Okay. So I'm going to study these notes here. I'm going to play back this podcast because you've really like she enlightened me, so I really appreciate that. Now, I'll be in touch with you probably later today as well. So any closing comments, because we're going to end it on that, if you don't mind, but any closing comments? Okay, I don't know if he's still there. All right, well, thank you. You still there? Hello?
Still here, but I do gotta go grab something real quick.
Okay, what's your name? I didn't catch your name, by the way.
I mean, my name's Gregory. I'm a publishing house owner here. I'm the owner of multiple locations of publishing houses around the United States. I'm a pretty public person, but it's not about me, and it's about
right.
solving the problem.
I just wanted to, you know, who I was talking to. So, Gregory, all right, that was it. All right, Gregory, I really appreciate it. I'll be in touch later today. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.